In the heart of San Francisco, a transformation occurred that few could have imagined. Where a hulking double-decker freeway once dominated the Embarcadero waterfront, today families stroll along palm-lined promenades and children delight harbor seals and lush parks. This revitalization happened not through addition, but through subtraction, the deliberate removal of infrastructure that had been considered essential. Despite fierce opposition and predictions of traffic nightmares, the freeway's removal led to a 50% increase in housing, 15% boost in jobs, and a vibrant waterfront that's now one of the city's crown jewels. This remarkable story exemplifies a counterintuitive truth. Sometimes the best way to improve something isn't to add to it, but to take something away. Yet this approach remains surprisingly rare in our additive world. From New Year's resolutions focused on doing more rather than less, to our ever-expanding possessions and commitments, we consistently overlook the transformative power of subtraction. Why do we instinctively add when removing might be better? And how might we change this deeply ingrained pattern to create more fulfilling lives and a more sustainable world? Our tendency to overlook subtraction has deep evolutionary roots. When we add freeways, files, or features, we create visible proof of our actions and competence. Subtraction, by contrast, often leaves no evidence of our work. Removing the Embarcadero freeway created a beautiful absence, but visitors today can't see what was taken away. This biological tendency to demonstrate competence through visible accumulation isn't just a human trait. Male bowerbirds meticulously gather colorful objects to attract mates, with more elaborate collections signaling greater fitness. We humans follow similar patterns, accumulating possessions, connections, and achievements to signal our value. This acquisitive instinct served our ancestors well. Hunter-gatherers who stockpiled resources during abundance had better survival odds during scarcity, explaining why I still finish entire bags of chips despite being full. But in modern contexts, this drive can become pathological. The tragic case of the Collier brothers illustrates the extreme. These educated New Yorkers died amid mountains of accumulated possessions, including 14 pianos and decades of newspapers. While few reach such extremes, psychologist Stephanie Preston's research shows that acquisitiveness exists on a spectrum, with many people reluctant to discard even virtual objects in experiments. Brain imaging reveals why. Acquiring things activates our mesolimbocortical reward pathway, the same system triggered by food and drugs. When we add something, our brain releases dopamine, creating a pleasurable sensation that reinforces the behavior. Subtraction, by contrast, doesn't provide this immediate neurological reward. Our quantitative perception further biases us toward addition. We judge differences between large quantities as less significant than differences between small ones. The difference between 1 and 2 mammoths, a 100% increase, matters more than between 8 and 9, just 13% more. This relative quantity sense evolved for survival, but makes subtraction inherently less precise and noticeable than addition. Children estimate 80 minus 30 less accurately than 20 plus 30, even though both equal 50. This quantitative bias has shaped human thought throughout history. Negative numbers were once considered pure nonsense by brilliant minds like Pascal. Children learning math struggle with subtraction beyond zero, calling it impossible when using tangible objects. Shifting perspective reveals subtraction's hidden power. Removing one mammoth from two leaves one representing 100% of the total, while adding one to two means each represents only 33%. By 5,000 years ago, Mesopotamian civilization had evolved dramatically beyond hunter-gatherer societies to include specialized professions, permanent structures, and unprecedented material comforts. This transition brought not just physical additions, but profound conceptual transformations, from complex social hierarchies and religious institutions to systems of recorded knowledge and commerce. Monumental architecture, structures whose scale and elaboration exceed the requirements of any practical functions, emerged as a universal signal of civilization across cultures and eras. Whether Rome's Colosseum, Egypt's pyramids, or the massive temple complexes of Angkor Wat, these enormous yet functionally excessive structures invariably appeared alongside the development of cities and complex societies. Archaeological evidence has revealed a surprising pattern. Monumental structures often preceded cultural flourishing rather than following it. The discovery at Göbekli Tepe in Turkey fundamentally challenged traditional assumptions about civilizational development. These massive stone temples, dating back 12,000 years, predated agriculture and permanent settlements by millennia. Their construction required unprecedented levels of cooperation among hunter-gatherer bands, suggesting that the drive to build something magnificent may have been the catalyst that brought people together in the first place. This first came the temple, then the city theory dramatically reverses our traditional understanding of civilization's development. Material culture, our deeply ingrained tendency to accumulate possessions, served a crucial social function, helping humans navigate increasingly larger and more complex social groups by creating visual shorthand for social roles and status. The development of writing systems further accelerated this accumulative tendency by enabling sophisticated record keeping, codified laws, and the transmission of ideas beyond individual memories. From monumental architecture to personal possessions to written records, civilization has fundamentally been a project of continuous enlargement and addition. For early humans lacking these material frameworks, the concept of subtraction would have seemed not just unnatural, but incomprehensible. There was simply nothing to take away. This shared human predisposition toward accumulation isn't uniform across cultures. Stanford professor Hazel Rose Marcus's groundbreaking research reveals a fundamental clash between independent worldviews, prevalent in Western societies, where individuals define themselves primarily through personal abilities and values, and interdependent worldviews, common in Eastern cultures, where identity is more closely tied to relationships and social roles. In fascinating experiments using S-shaped formations in sand, Americans consistently focused on central objects, while Japanese participants paid more attention to contextual relationships and background elements. This fundamental difference in perception profoundly affects how different cultures approach change and problem-solving. Contemporary examples illustrate the power of understanding these different approaches. Savannah, Georgia's historic district, designed by James Oglethorpe, exemplifies enlightened urban planning that used public squares to reduce private lot sizes while creating vibrant community spaces. The success of Collier Brothers Park in Harlem demonstrates how small urban spaces can be transformed through careful consideration of their surroundings rather than elaborate additions. These cases show that transformation through subtraction, while requiring more nuanced thinking, can produce remarkably effective and sustainable solutions that enhance community life while consuming fewer resources. When writing a book about subtraction, I faced my own contradiction. My wife and I added a 900-square-foot addition to our Cape Cod home despite hosting a student design competition explicitly themed Addition by Subtraction. Despite my intentions to make a statement through subtraction, economic reality intervened. Home values increase with square footage, making subtraction financially irrational. This economic force against subtraction is relatively new historically. President Truman's 1949 inaugural address marked a turning point when he declared America would help the free peoples of the world through more food, more clothing, more materials for housing, and more mechanical power. This anaphora of more signaled a fundamental shift in global values. Throughout most of history, ordinary citizens weren't focused on accumulating wealth. Truman's televised decree represented the culmination of economic thinking that had developed since Adam Smith, who argued that growth was the fairest way to improve conditions for everyone. After the Great Depression and World War II, Keynesian economics positioned individual consumption as the path to collective prosperity. More became a moral objective and the key to peace. This morality has indeed improved many lives. global population tripled since 1949, while per capita income grew from $3,000 to $14,500. Literacy rates increased from 55% to 85%, and life expectancy rose from 48 to over 70 years. But just because more has made things better doesn't mean less cannot also improve our lives. The economics of addition extends beyond material goods to our most precious resource, time. Research by sociologist Leslie Perlow revealed widespread time famine among software engineers, who imposed social obligations on themselves, damaging both personal relationships and work output. Similarly, Army officers face impossible schedules with 297 days of mandatory activities to fit into 256 available days, forcing them to cut corners despite their identity being built on following orders. Government regulations have ballooned from 10,000 pages in Truman's time to over 180,000 by 2020. Yet subtraction can be profitable when focused on human needs rather than just technology. Ryan McFarlane's pedal-less Strider bikes revolutionized children's cycling by removing an element most considered essential. By focusing on human capabilities, realizing two-year-olds could balance without pedaling despite lacking strength to pedal, he created a superior product that helps children learn cycling faster. Similarly, Nike's Air Max shoes with visible less and Anna Keechline's hollow building blocks demonstrate that when everyone adds, developing the opposite skill, subtraction, becomes valuable. The famous quote about writing long letters because there wasn't time to write short ones, expressed by figures from Cicero to Pascal to Franklin, illustrates how we often satisfice, Herbert Simon's term combining satisfy and suffice, settling for good enough rather than investing effort in improvement. While satisficing efficiently prevents wasted effort in many situations, like quick grocery shopping, it can also prevent beneficial subtraction. There's a crucial distinction between lazy less, pre-satisfied, like a standard bike without training wheels, and post-satisfied less, like a Strider balance bike that requires more effort but yields better results. Getting others to notice and appreciate subtraction is crucial. Landscape architect Kate Orff won a design competition by proposing to remove infrastructure from downtown Lexington, uncovering a buried creek. Data visualization expert Edward Tufte creates impactful slides by eliminating non-information ink. Writing experts from Hemingway to Strunk and White advocate for concision, yet people still tend to add rather than subtract when revising. This happens partly because audiences often use length as a proxy for quality, as seen in standardized tests and academic requirements that reward volume. Bruce Springsteen's Darkness on the Edge of Town exemplifies persistent subtraction. Springsteen cut lyrics, stripped down instrumentals, and eliminated potential hit songs to create his Samurai record. This deliberate, noticeable less fundamentally changed rock music, just as Maya Lin's and Kate Orff's subtractive designs transformed their disciplines. Subtraction connects to deeper psychological rewards, achieving flow states and building self-efficacy. While lazy subtraction doesn't challenge us and satisficing doesn't test our limits, deliberate subtraction can create optimal flow experiences. This explains why editing, subtracting, often feels more rewarding than writing, adding. It presents a bounded challenge matching our abilities. To overcome subtraction's negative valence, we can invert its presentation. Kate Orff brilliantly demonstrates this by using positively valenced verbs like reveal, clean, and carve rather than subtract. This framing matters because humans experience loss aversion, valuing what they already have more than potential gains. When asked about this strategy, Orff responded with elegant simplicity. I often think of our projects as starting with what is there, plus a unit of transformation. This inversion helps audiences embrace subtraction's benefits without triggering resistance. The 1985 Sun City music video united diverse artists like Miles Davis, Run DMC, Pat Benatar, and Bono to expose South Africa's apartheid system. This cultural statement, alongside economic actions like dock worker Leo Robinson's refusal to unload South African cargo, helped make systemic racism visible to the world. As Ibram Kendi notes, racism itself is institutional, structural, and systemic, making its dismantling a matter of system change. Kurt Lewin, a Jewish scholar who fled Nazi Germany, discovered that the best way to understand complex systems was to attempt changing them, particularly by manipulating invisible forces. While one approach is adding new positive forces, like sending supplies to anti-apartheid groups, Lewin found that subtracting opposing forces was more effective. Daniel Kahneman summarizes this insight: if you want to achieve change in behavior, there is one good way and one bad way. The good way is by diminishing restraining forces. Complex systems require simplification to be understood and improved. While categorizing details helps with organization, it doesn't reveal what truly matters. George Miller's famous research shows our working memory has severely restricted capacity. Like the fictional mapmakers in Lewis Carroll and Jorge Luis Borges, who created useless maps as large as the territories they represented, trying to track every system detail overwhelms our cognitive capacity. Dana Meadows, a pioneer in systems thinking, emphasized finding a system's essence by asking, "What is the system trying to achieve?" By subtracting unnecessary detail, we clarify intervention points. Dr. Peter Pronovost at Johns Hopkins demonstrated how subtracting detail could save lives by reducing catheter infections. Rather than focusing on the dozens of complex steps, he identified 5 essential actions: hand washing, skin cleaning, sterile drapes, protective gear, and sterile dressing that virtually eliminated infections. This simple checklist approach has saved thousands of lives by focusing on the essence rather than overwhelming detail. A less list offers 4 key steps for effective subtraction. 1. Subtract before improving, like emergency room triage. 2. Make subtracting first, like in the game Jenga, where you must remove a block before adding to the top. 3. Persist to noticeable less, like Springsteen's Samurai Record. And 4. Reuse your subtractions, like donut holes. The Jenga example illustrates how subtracting first can be powerful. The game requires removing blocks from lower levels before adding them to the top, creating a novel balance-focused approach that sold 100 million copies. Our new geological epoch, the Anthropocene, is defined by humans becoming the dominant influence on Earth's well-being. While climate change causes approximately 250,000 deaths annually and contributes to refugee crises through extreme weather events, resource scarcity, and habitat destruction, we can reframe the Anthropocene positively. Humans are the first species with the consciousness and technological capability to deliberately improve the planet's conditions rather than simply adapt to them. Dana Meadows' influential 1972 work, Limits to Growth, identified endless expansion as unsustainable on a finite planet, using computer modeling to demonstrate how unchecked resource consumption leads to systemic collapse. This has created polarization between Loraxes, who emphasize ecological limits and conservation, and well-intentioned Onceslers, who believe in human ingenuity and technological solutions to overcome environmental constraints. Subtraction offers a bridge between these perspectives, recognizing planetary boundaries while creating new possibilities through strategic removal rather than constant addition. This approach has proven effective in areas like reducing industrial emissions, eliminating harmful chemicals, and restoring natural habitats. Costa Rica's climate efforts face the fundamental challenge that environmental improvements are often invisible. People may notice reforesting landscapes, but cannot see reduced carbon dioxide levels or improving air quality. Their ambitious carbon neutrality goal serves a dual purpose, providing concrete metrics for guiding systematic improvements while offering a visible vision that inspires other nations. Though Costa Rica produces only 0.02% of global emissions, their visible example has proven remarkably influential. Germany, the UK, Netherlands, and even corporate giants like Amazon have subsequently committed to carbon neutrality targets, creating a multiplier effect far beyond Costa Rica's direct impact. Costa Rica has made tangible progress. Over 98% of electricity now comes from renewable sources, including hydroelectric, wind, and geothermal power. Their forests continue expanding, removing millions of tons of carbon annually through natural sequestration. They've permanently halted oil extraction despite having reserves, earning recognition as the world's greenest country by the Happy Planet Index. While traditional GDP would value the Onceler's destructive Thneed factory, Costa Rica's modified economic measures assign monetary value to forest carbon removal services, allowing farmers to earn income by growing trees rather than cutting them down. Though Costa Rica's GDP per capita is much lower than America's, their reprioritized spending, including the landmark decision to abolish their army in 1949 and redirect military funding to education and healthcare, has improved literacy rates to 98% and health outcomes to where Costa Ricans now live longer than Americans on average. Archbishop Desmond Tutu advocates using the same divestment tactics that helped end apartheid to combat climate change, arguing that the moral imperative is similarly clear. The University of California system, the Gates Foundation, Ireland's $8 billion sovereign wealth fund, and hundreds of faith-based organizations have already divested from fossil fuels, whose current investment levels represent 5 times more potential emissions than scientists deem safe for limiting warming to 1.5°C. This growing divestment movement, now exceeding $14 trillion in assets, demonstrates how subtraction can drive positive change through coordinated withdrawal from harmful systems. Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu's ancient advice to subtract things every day for wisdom remains relevant in our information-saturated age. Our biological information processing capacity is strictly limited, between 60 to 120 bits per second, enough for one conversation, but not two. As Herbert Simon observed, a wealth of information creates a poverty of attention. Information overload can create actual poverty, as Shafir and Malinathan's research revealed. They found that while poor people make worse decisions, it's not that bad decisions cause poverty. Rather, poverty's cognitive burdens lead to bad decisions. When bandwidth is consumed by survival dilemmas, like choosing between food or books, little remains for processing new information or opportunities. Throughout history, humans have struggled with information management, from ancient warnings in the Hebrew Bible about too many books to Renaissance-era organizing systems. We've developed strategies, storing, libraries, data servers, summarizing, encyclopedias, Wikipedia, sorting, alphabetizing, Google, and slowing addition, typewriters versus word processors. But the most crucial strategy is selection, deliberately subtracting unnecessary information. My breakthrough in mechanics class came through subtraction, not addition. Facing potential failure after maintaining only a C average, I stripped the course down to its essence, Newton's second law, F equals MA. Rather than memorizing dozens of equations, I realized everything could be derived from this fundamental principle. This mental pruning earned me a 98 on the final exam, shocking my classmates. Thomas Kuhn's influential work on scientific revolutions reveals how profound advances require not just adding new ideas, but subtracting old ones. When watching a child on a swing, Galileo and Aristotle would literally see different things. Galileo observing inertia and forces, while Aristotle would see a boy drawn to his natural place at the universe's center. Revolutionary thinkers like Kepler relied heavily on analogies to overcome entrenched misconceptions. While we naturally resist shedding wrong ideas, as Festinger observed when cult members rationalized the world not ending, analogies help because they feel like accommodation rather than replacement. As Kepler himself acknowledged, "I cherish more than anything else the analogies, my most trustworthy masters." Our journey through subtraction has revealed powerful anti-subtraction forces that permeate multiple domains of human experience. Though nature demonstrates the value of mental pruning through evolutionary processes, our cultural norms and economic systems have developed a persistent bias toward addition. This tendency manifests everywhere, from children's creative play with Lego blocks to professional writing and architectural design. Even when presented with opportunities to subtract, we encounter multiple psychological barriers. Deep-seated hoarding instincts, the desire to signal competence through visible output, cultural reverence for existing structures, and an inherent morality that drives us to accumulate in our homes, schedules, and lives. To effectively counter these deeply ingrained tendencies, we must fundamentally invert our approach to problem-solving and creation. This means deliberately trying less before more, systematically subtracting detail through careful triage, and prioritizing removal like in the game of Jenga, where success comes from understanding which pieces can be safely removed while maintaining structural integrity. Since many stakeholders may not yet appreciate that less is not a loss, it becomes crucial to reframe subtraction in more palatable terms, describing it as cleaning, carving, or revealing. This reframing adds a transformative dimension that makes the process of removal more acceptable and even desirable. The key lessons from studying subtraction can be distilled into four fundamental strategies. First, inversion requires actively trying less before more, systematically subtracting detail through triage and making removal a priority in decision-making processes. Second, expansion involves recognizing addition and subtraction as complementary rather than opposing forces. When we think of adding something, it should automatically trigger consideration of what might be removed. This strategy requires accessing different perspectives, zooming out to see the broader field, and understanding that removing tension often represents the most effective way to improve systems. Third, distillation focuses on human needs rather than physical objects. Stripping away everything that doesn't spark joy or serve an essential purpose, and embracing complexity before working to find its essential core. Finally, persistence involves making the benefits of less undeniable through compelling examples. From Bruce Springsteen's stripped-down album Darkness on the Edge of Town, to Costa Rica's bold decision to eliminate its military, to leaving future generations a legacy of options rather than obligations, as demonstrated by visionaries like Sue, Leo, and Eleanor. The true power of subtraction lies not in simple reduction, but in achieving better outcomes by strategically removing elements that don't serve our ultimate purposes. This principle applies across diverse contexts, whether we're designing cities for better livability, solving complex problems, managing time more effectively, or addressing global challenges like climate change. The ability to identify and implement beneficial subtraction represents an increasingly crucial skill in our overcrowded, overstimulated world. By developing this often overlooked capacity for selective removal, we can create spaces, physical, mental, and temporal, where what truly matters has room to flourish and grow.